Hello, and welcome to the first episode of The 450, where we always make a splash on wrestling. My name is Todd Black, I'm the host of this podcast, and joining me today is...
Well, hello there, my name is JJ Pietra, Joshua Jeremiah, also the host of other shows such as A1 Podcast and Spectator Mode, right here on TheOuterHaven.net. And yes, I am a fucking wrestling nerd, okay? I'm on this podcast because I love wrestling. There you go, there's my intro. Love it.
And also joined, this is Matthew from the A1 Podcast and the War Infinite Panel Podcast. I'm here simply because I want to see some wrestling content. But honestly, I love wrestling. I got back into it because tax season, I couldn't sleep. So I just caught up on like 5+ years of wrestling after post-Attitude Era and everything. It's like, wow. I love wrestling. It's always good to come back after like a relapse fan, you know?
And as I said, I'm Todd. I'm actually the host of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast here on at the Outer Haven. Yes, I am a wrestling fan too. I started out in WWE, actually right after the Attitude Era, ironically enough. And then I watched that, got an Impact when it was good. Then, of course, NXT came along. I found out about Ring of Honor. Then I found out about Lucha Underground. And I've just been, you know, full-blown wrestling ever since. I've watched a little bit of New Japan too. And, you know, we are all about wrestling. We want the best wrestling on the planet. And so when a certain show was coming up, we all got together and we're like, we should just do a wrestling podcast. So here we are. We are the 450. You're welcome. No, not you, Jericho. Just the people. You're welcome. Anyway. So yes, it is, at the time of this recording, it is the day after the first ever event of All Elite Wrestling, Double or Nothing. And you could say that they went all in on this event.
All the references.
The puns. Oh,
we did it.
Yes.
Esports money.
Yeah, I wish. But yes, we are here today to give you our full breakdown on everything that happened at Double or Nothing. Our thoughts, our feelings, what they could do better. And of course, how this compares, how this show truly impacted the wrestling world. So we're going to do this match by match. So stay tuned. We're going to get to everything tonight or today, tomorrow, whatever. Change the world, whatever. So let's get started off with the Casino Battle Royal. Now, I was at All In, and I'll admit the over-the-top rope, sorry, it was over-budget Battle Royal was fun, but it wasn't exactly the best thing ever. Even though Flip Gordon coming in at the end got like one of the biggest pops of the night. So just saying. So having the Casino Battle Royal with like different rules and, you know, a slightly predictable outcome, but, you know, still fun nonetheless. I liked that they started off the night this way.
Oh yeah, my take on it was I kind of liked the premise that this, I honestly was still using a number system, but it kind of gave a little gimmick with the cards. It was pretty cool, and I think the highlight night for me as you know, oh my god, Tommy Dreamer's back. I thought you were chilling at home taking that retirement check. He's back, yeah, boys. That was pretty much that was it for me, like me swinging like a little schoolgirl. But overall, I give the event a solid, like for a first main show with very little minor problems. Oh, and Janela just selling his ass getting kicked, just selling it.
How many times does this guy have to die? I mean, seriously, like they killed him through a table at All In, and now they killed him through another table at Double or Nothing. Come on.
It's safe to say he's immortal.
He is immortal. Joey Janela is a bad immortal. Bad boy immortal. There we go.
Yeah. That should probably be his next handle or moniker. Yeah. That would be great. But absolutely. Honestly, give that event, like, if I had to give like a point system out of 5, I'd give it a solid 3.5.
That's fair.
Because it's, yeah.
Yeah. JJ?
I kind of gave it like a 3. To me, it kind of felt just like a regular battle royal. I mean, yeah, the gimmick was pretty cool. Coming down in, you know, your set of suit was, you know, really cool. And then, of course, you know, that number 30 entrant, you know, not to knock off another
21.
Company, but...
Yeah.
The Joker, the wild card on the final entrant, Adam Page. Once that happened, it was kind of like, all right, so you could definitely tell because he lasted this long that MJF and Adam Page are going to be the final two.
Yeah.
And it kind of ended up being that way. It was a little predictable, but still, it's a battle royal. I mean, the spots that were there. And of course, Joey Janela just obviously dying once again through a table. Absolutely beautiful. The Ace Romero elimination, though.
Dear gosh.
Just like, if you ever want to, like, you know, pick some up and just heave them with all of your weight, I mean, that's basically the way to do it. But,
that's why he got into the Battle Royal, if you saw Double or Nothing, was they saw him do the pounds and they go, oh, yeah, we got to get him in this.
Yeah, Monty Brown, eat your heart out. That's how you do a pounce, ladies and gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it was a pretty good way to kick off the show. Got some energy into the crowd, and it was a battle royal. I mean, it wasn't really too over the top, over the budget. It was, you know, just right and good pace setter right there.
Well, with con money, you can't really go over budget. I mean, you have to really work hard to go over budget with con money. For me, I liked it. Again, when Paige came out at 21, it was predictable, especially after what happened with Pac, which we'll get to a little bit later. But, you know, I could tell, he's going to win it, which was fine. He deserves it. But for me, what I really liked was seeing some of these entrants for the first time, like Jungle Boy. I had seen Janela at All In. MJF I'd seen, but Sean Spears, the Perfect 10. Oh my gosh, he was pop for the crowd. Like, he just came out hooded, and you knew it was him, but he unloaded that hood, and the crowd went crazy. That was awesome.
Yeah.
And Dreamer got a big pop, apparently. I had a lot of friends at the event, and they were live tweeting everything, so that was pretty cool. But yeah, for a battle royal, it was good. I hope that this is not a staple that they do every show. You know, it was different for All In because they were, you know, tying into the Ring of Honor title match, which is fine. And, you know, this one was tying to the AEW, but they hopefully next time for Fight for the Fallen and All Out, they don't do this, because this should be a sparing thing, you know? Because if it's not, then it's basically what we had with Evolution with that other show. You know, like, they had a Women's Royal Rumble, even though we just had that. Then 3 months later, we had another one. It's like, okay, sure. So, but still, good way to start off the night.
Also, I think I should probably say this. I think we were chatting about Double or Nothing when Adam Page came out, and I think it was Utah who was surprised that Adam Page was there due to, you know, the Pac thing. And I was like, yo, the check cleared. All checks heal wounds, man.
Yeah, I actually think it was JJ, but yeah, still.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the thing, is like, let's just talk about it now. Paige was supposed to fight Pac, which was going to be an awesome match, no doubt. But then Pac, who has at least the Dragon Gate title, he wanted to stay undefeated so that he could keep bringing legitimacy to the title, because he's been undefeated for like 20 months. And so he pulled out of the deal. He's not out of AEW. Cody said during StarCast, he's not out of AEW. It's just that he had to pull out of this match, which is fine. So I was a little surprised, but I kind of felt he would have a match. I just didn't expect it to be the Battle Royal match. So, still, good match, good start. And then we got, I think, one of the surprisingly good matches of the night, Kip Sabian versus Sammy Guevara.
Yes.
So, I understood why this one was on the pre-show. These are not big-name guys, which is fine, even though Sammy's been on Being the Elite for the last, I don't know, month or so. And, you know, this was meant to be high-flying, cruiserweight-style action, and these guys are talented, all right? I have seen Sammy Guevara thanks to Lucha Underground, but I've never seen Kip – I never even heard of Kip Sabian before they showed him on the road to Double or Nothing. So seeing these guys do their moves and doing it so smoothly, it's like the kip-up – there was this kip-up that Sammy did. He literally kipped up but kept his body arched back. And then he slowly rose up, and it's like, dude, that's not right. That's too smooth. Yeah. Too smooth, Sammy. Also, why are you wearing a panda?
He's confirmed furry, man. Yeah. So AEW is trying to hit every market known to man. Every market.
Yeah. So what did you guys think of the match? JJ, start with you.
It was actually really good. It surprised me because it started off a little bit slow. It started off almost like that WWE-style pacing. And at that moment, it's like, all right, here we go. The first singles match of AEW, even though it's on the pre-show, it's like, well, okay, I can understand they're trying to tone it down. It's a pre-show. And then all of a sudden, they just start going ham. And I'm like, all right, foot in mouth, salt on foot, hot sauce, you know, get that flavor going, you know? And yeah, they really put a smile on my face at the end of that. A very athletic contest. Of course, Sammy Guevara, former AAA Cruiserweight Champion. He lost the title a little bit earlier in the year. So, sadly, we didn't get to see the title showcase at the show. But, you know, still, hell of an outing. And for those who tuned in to the pre-show, which was all over the place on the internet, they got treated to a very special encounter. And I'm looking forward to seeing these two, you know, go at it again if they do, or just, you know, against other people. And they definitely got the talent to bring it.
Yeah. I was just as surprised at the smoothness of the match. I would say athleticism. And I just really, like I said, it's been, like I said, so watching WWE, particularly for, I would say, a semi-long time, it's like, wow, people can actually wrestle. Wow, this is new. This is new to me. But it's honestly, my only complaint of the match was, I think, that slow opening and then, like, hit a move, pose. That was, like, my running joke. Hit a move, pose. I was like, oh, come on, just hit him with something. That was my only complaint. Yeah.
Those were their personalities, though. I mean, they literally call themselves Super Bad and the Very Best. So it's like, you know, they're meant to pose. And Sammy Guevara, you know, I don't think he's MJF levels of heel, but he's heel-ish, and that's what you need. And then Sabian's, like, you know, crowd-pleasing, you know, poser. So
yeah,
I can dig it. But yeah, good match, great way to great first singles match. And I definitely look for, again, this is what AEW is really all about: the young talent that you may not have heard of showing off why you need to know about these guys. You know, I was not sold on Kip Sabian until he started doing his things, and I'm like, okay, yeah, that's pretty awesome. So yeah, I dig. Also, a shout out to the female referee. You know, All Elite Wrestling is for everyone, including male and female refs, which we saw multiple during the night. So thank you, AEW, for that. All right, moving on to the first official tag team match of AEW's pay-per-view career. SU!
Yeah.
And OWE.
And OWE.
And OWE.
Just those guys.
Yeah, just. Hey, respect to Shima. Respect to Shima. He's a legend. So this for me personally was one of the wild cards in the night, because I've seen SCU multiple times via Ring of Honor and All In, but OWE, you know, this is the Chinese brand of wrestling, if you hadn't heard, and Shima's a legend. He's done China, Japan, America, all over. But then we had a T-Hawk and Lindemann, AKA the Strong Hearts. So, you know, I had to wonder, would these guys be able to perform on this stage in this spotlight that really start off the pay-per-view? Because this was the first official match of the night. And they brought it. You know, it was slow at times, I won't lie. And, you know, a few things might have gone a little smoother. But, you know, these guys performed. And the OWE guys, I loved a lot of their moves. And there was a lot of great chemistry between them. And I look forward to continuing to see the exchange between these brands.
Yeah.
Yeah, and honestly, before I get to my thoughts, I just gotta say, this is absolutely the worst town I've ever seen a wrestling show from. Had to get that out there. But no, I love me some SCU. I've followed the careers of Scorpio Sky, Christopher Daniels, and Frankie Kazarian across numerous promotions, singles, tag team, whatever you want to call it. I love these guys to death. The fact that they're all together in this, you know, kind of like this heelish face-ish group. It's like, all right, we're heels, we hate every town, but people love us for whatever reason.
Yeah.
It's a duality thing, and it's absolutely beautiful. As far as the match goes, this just screamed Dragon Gate six-man tag. Like, anytime you see a six-man tag with Dragon Gate wrestlers involved, even though these guys from OWE, Shima, of course, one of the founders of Dragon Gate, both here and the now defunct Dragon Gate USA promotion, they were featured in Ring of Honor. It was just like that pedal to the metal, you know, breakneck speed, but it didn't really start out that way. As you said, it started a little bit slow, and then it kind of picked up the pace, and it kind of slowed it back down, picked it up, slowed it back down. So the pacing was kind of like all over the place, but still high energy, got the crowd into it. And for the main show, for the first match, that's what you want to do. You want to basically get the crowd into it. You want to get them hyped for the rest of the night. And I think this match actually accomplished that despite some of the pacing issues.
Definitely. I definitely agree with that. I felt like, yeah, SCU, I just loved the, I was actually lit, because he was outside of him hitting the angel wings towards the end of the match. And I really loved, he was like, oh, he's going to start singing Journey. Oh, no. Nah. He's like, it was, yeah. But definitely, I got pumped watching those guys. And OEW was definitely a treat to see due to, you know, not being fully exposed to it, to the wrestling style, as well as they ran, again, smooth. They hit the moves. You did the backflip thingamabob. Dude hit the backflip and not, you know, hurt the mat. It's all good. You did the thing.
So I look forward to seeing. I mean, obviously, we don't know how often we're going to see OWE and AEW, but if this is any indication of what we can expect, and this is just, you know, a tag team match, imagine what they can do in singles matches. I'm interested. So, thank you, AEW, for doing that. All right, moving on to the triple threat women's match. Oh, wait a minute.
Oh.
What a snap. Oh. Brandy's coming out. Oh, no, she's going to insert herself in the match. But even though she's not, it's Allison Kong! Oh, my gosh!
Yeah.
So, yeah. That was pretty much my reaction, point for point, minus the octaves. I think it went a few octaves higher when Kong came out. Because, dear gosh, they got Awesome Kong. Okay, I don't know if this is a one-night thing or a full-time thing. They didn't announce that officially. But even for one night, getting someone like Awesome freaking Kong is awesome. So,
it's in the name.
Yeah, it's in the name. It's in the name. All right? And I'm actually really happy that they pulled this swerve, because Brandy coming in, it would have made her, a bit more heelish. Not that she's not a heel already, technically. But it would have made her even more heelish and kind of like a Stephanie McMahon kind of move. But instead, she just throws in another, well-known, well-respected wrestler in Awesome Kong. Boom. And so that was some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, most definitely. As I called her, the Nyla Rose equalizer, because without Awesome Kong in the match, I mean, Kylie Rae and Dr. Britt Baker would just have been bouncing off of Nyla Rose all night.
Basically.
Let's be real. And that formula is okay. So we need to kind of like that equalizer. And to have it be Awesome Kong, Amazing Kong in TNA, Karma in WWE, whatever you want to know her as.
It was Awesome Kong in TNA. That's how I first met her.
Really? I thought it was Amazing Kong. Maybe that was Shimmer or something.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it was one of those things. She's been known by many things. Kia Stevens, bless her heart. So basically, she comes out, gets the massive pop, the big holy you-know-what moment. She gets to the ring, and then she spends like most of the match outside of it. That was the biggest disappointment, because now we had this big surprise. We had the big first shockwave of the night. That's the pace. It's like, oh my God, if Awesome Kong is here, who else is going to be here? And then she barely gets to showcase anything. She gets a Tower of Doom spot. She gets a couple of hits in, and then she's basically sleeping on the outside for the rest of the match.
She gets speared to the stairs, yeah.
Yeah, it was a bit of a disappointment. We did not get the official Awesome Kong is All In graphic or All Elite graphic, so it's making me believe this was like that one-off appearance. And if you're going to do a one-off appearance, I really wish you could have done a little bit more to leave a bigger impression. But that's just me. For what it was, the match was actually pretty good. There's a couple of miscues in it. It was actually the only match I've rated below 4 stars the entire night. So when your worst match on the main show is 3.5 stars, in my opinion, this is a pretty good card.
You do realize you gave the Battle Royal a 3, right?
I said main show.
Ugh.
Wow.
We don't count the pre-show. That's evil in wrestling.
Hey,
we've been taught, we've been conditioned that pre-shows don't matter. obviously no disrespect to the Battle Royale and Kip and Sammy, but those were great matches. But all right, so I take that back. The second lowest rated match
there
of
you
the
go.
Night.
There
we
go.
There we go.
3.5 stars. When that happens and the rest of the show is just basically hitting on all cylinders, it's a great card, but I just wish there was a little bit more. I really would have loved to seen Kong and Nyla just go at it a lot more than what they did, because that's basically the big money match. Unless they're just teasing for something in the future, which I hope they are.
Possible.
It's possible. It was pretty good. Pretty good outing. And even though I say pretty good, it's still a lot better than what we see on some of the other competitions. So.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Or here's my theory why Awesome Kong didn't play such an impact. I mean, I was ecstatic when I saw. I was like, holy shit, we're in there, boys! But I was like, I felt like, this is an opinion, the AEW put a lot of wrestlers within the show, not a lot of them signed to AEW, maybe some of them come from other ring. This was probably, hey, I'm going to pay you, I'm going to just make up a number, guys, shoot me here, $20,000. Come and do a show tonight. If you like the experience here, we can book you for another show, book you from, temp to perm working here. Maybe they're just trying to get feelers. And that's why some of them didn't feel like they performed that hard. You know what? I'm just doing a feel. I'm doing a touch show, a touch job.
Possible.
And so we'll get to that. That's what I felt about Awesome Kong, and that's why I was disappointed. Because she was the only one. It's like, we had the only second big girl then. I was like, all right, we're going to get some those two going to smash each other, and Doctor and Smiley going to smash each other, and I'm like, nope, oh, okay. It's, meh.
It's all right. So I was at, like I said, I was at All In, and for me, and I noticed in my actual All In review that I did, the women's match between Dr. Britt Baker, Tessa Blanchard, Madison Rain, and crap. Oh, gosh. Dr. Britt Baker, Madison Rain. Who was the fourth? Oh, my gosh. Why am I blanking here? That's wrong.
Oh, Lucy.
Dr. Britt Baker, Tessa Blanchard, Madison Rain.
Madison
Rain. Oh, my gosh. This is horrifying.
How do you use Google, I guess?
Oh, I'm trying to note. She married Zack Ryder. The Hot Mess. That's her name. She was the Hot Mess. That was her name. Okay, look that up while I keep talking. So I saw that match, and that match was so much fun for no other reason than the all four women got to show off who they were, and there was top rope spots, there were strong spots. You know, Tessa Blanchard was a beast, you know, and everything. With this match, even though it was a fatal four way, we didn't really have that. In fact, the people who got the most spots was Dr. Britt Baker and Kylie Rae, which was fine. Except, like JJ said, I wanted to see more of Nyla versus Kong, which, again, we could get later, and that's fine. But it's just, you know, you were promoing Nyla as, you know, this dominating woman, and she was in the match for some parts, but not all of it. And of course, she did the spear to Kong at the end, which was cool. But, you know, then at the end, it was just Britt versus Kylie. And while it was cool, I don't feel it was enough. So, but still, it was still a good contest. And Kylie Rae, oh my gosh, she's one of my new crushes for sure. She just keeps smiling. Why does she keep smiling? Yeah, and then the one time she doesn't smile, she gets charged into a super kick and her bow get knocked off. Did you see that? That's perfect placement right there, ladies and gentlemen. When you get a super kick and your bow gets kicked off. That was hilarious. So, but yeah, I think it wasn't as good as All In, but it was good enough. So, and I got a very solid start to their women's wrestling revolution that they're going to do. And, of course, we have the other match later on that we'll be talking about soon. So, again, good stuff. I agree with JJ. I think it was a 3.5 out of 5. So, yeah. Still trying to think of what the Hot Mess's name is. Oh, it's burning me
up. Chelsea Green.
Chelsea Green. That's why I couldn't think of it. Thank you. Oh,
thank
man.
You, Wikipedia.
Thank you, Wikipedia. So yeah, that she was good. She had a big pop, and also she's supposedly in NXT, but I haven't seen her. So yeah, moving on. All right, here's one of my surprise matches of the night in terms of fun and quality. Best Friends versus Angelico and Jack Evans. Yeah, so Best Friends was from Ring of Honor. Chelsea Green. So, you know, Best Friends is from Ring of Honor. We've done great work with Young Bucks. Actually, Young Bucks versus Best Friends was actually my first tag team match that I ever saw featuring the Young Bucks and Best Friends. So that kind of worked out nicely. And then Angelico and Evans have been all around the world. I saw them in Lucha Underground, so having this being one of the last matches announced was actually really cool. Very good tag team styles, you know, kind of a ground and pound versus, you know, the high flying Lucha style. Jack Evans, dear gosh, shut him up. You know, I say that because he's a heel. He's such a heel. And then Angelico is just such a gifted athlete. So I give this one a 4 out of 5 personally. I wish Angelico had more time, because he is so gifted. Look up on Angelico stage dive Lucha Underground and you'll see one of my favorite moments in all of wrestling, with Matt Stryker shouting, "That was dumb!" So when he does a 30-foot stage dive, yeah, eat your heart out, Joey Janela. So, but still a good tag team match, and that's enough for me.
Yep, I thought this one was actually paced a lot better than the 6-man tag, and also a little bit of flub on commentary as they kind of called this the first official tag team match. Like the 6-man didn't happen unless
it depends on how you define tag teams matches, I suppose.
Yeah, apparently. But yeah, it was a little bit slow to start, and then the pace built up a little bit more, and then it hit it on all cylinders and went right into a hot finish. So that's how you basically pace out a match. You draw the people in slowly, and then you basically get them more excited and more excited as it goes on, and then you just hit them from out of nowhere with an exciting finish, and you leave them cheering. That's basically what happened. Also, what happened to Jack Evans over the years? I mean, I watched him in Ring of Honor, then I never watched him in Lucha Underground. So
great.
I saw him last as an Eminem impersonator, and now he looks like a fucking man bun. Like, what in the world did he do to his hair? But yeah, still, that, still
Mr.
Rubber
Man.
That's
how he was in Lucha Underground. That's how he was, honestly.
Yeah, he's still Mr. RVD 2.0 in the fact that he is made out of rubber. He's still pulling off some amazing moves. The suplex into the 450 with the assist from Angelico was pretty awesome to see. But yeah, Chuck Taylor and Trent Beretta brought it as well. They proved that they belong in AEW, and they are one of the best tag teams on the planet from what I've seen. And of course, you know, the tease with the hug and then having Angelico and Jack Evans just ruin it to get the crowd you know, against them was absolutely amazing. But I don't think they ever recovered from that little heel spot because they were getting cheered a little bit more. And then, of course, the respect at the end kind of killed, like, their whole heel, you know, gimmick they were going for. So I think that was a little bit of a flub there from a character standpoint. I think they could have done better presenting themselves in that regard.
Yeah.
But then again, AEW is kind of, you know, aimed toward that smart crowd. And they're going to cheer whoever they want to cheer anyway, no matter how evil and heelish they are. So I guess it worked. But yeah, the match also surprised me. And I also gave that a 4 out of 5. I thought it was an absolutely fantastic tag match.
Matt?
All right. Go. So the best friends match, my favorite part about it was the athleticism in Angelico and Evans. Though I felt like the best friends was able to work that crowd so well. Like, just like people got lit from two bros hugging. I was like, okay, this is the money now. This is the future. People just want that bro hug. And the ender of that match was just so godlike. The freaking goons coming out of nowhere and then the freaking human throne.
Yeah. So for those who don't know those tag teams, and apparently a lot of people in that crowd did not know because there was a "Who are you?" chant going on. Those were the, I don't know their official names unless Josh, you got them. They are the tag team formerly known as the Super Smash Brothers, aka Player Uno and Player Dos. So look them up. The Young Bucks have fought them in the past. They were big in Canada, and I guess they're in AEW now.
Yeah, their names they're going by now is Evil Uno, so he didn't really change his name that much. And then Player Dose became Stu Grayson, so there you go.
That was the bald guy, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I figured. Yeah. The funniest meme I saw of that was they put Stu Grayson and then Eric from War Raiders, and they go, they put a picture of him, and they go, "What you ordered, what you got?"
Oh, yeah. That's just fantastic.
I did feel bad for them because this was, unlike Kong, this was a clear case of who are you exactly? And even though, like, especially Evil Uno and his minions are really kind of cool. I'm not going to deny that was actually kind of cool. It was really a case of who are you? Although that finishing move by, like, the off the top rope, like, face breaker, that was really cool looking. So.
Yeah, they used to call that a 1-2 smash, by the way.
Oh, gosh, man.
Yeah.
I seriously need to wrestling be the VG kid. All right. So, but that was the second official surprise of the night. I'm not including Paige, but so that was cool. And again, tag team wrestling. Who knew?
Who knew?
Who knew?
It's the thing. And one of the things I got to respect about the Angelico Evans match, I think it was Excalibur mentioned the match. Great commentator. He mentioned that they came from the Lucha Libre school, I believe.
Yep.
They came from, I forgot. Can someone tell my Josh, help me out here. Yeah, because I'm not going to pull a Thanos again.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I'm not going to pull a Thanos. I just forgot everything. So it's like, I can't remember the name of the school they came from. I think Salber mentioned it.
Yeah, it was like Jean Day or something like that.
Something like that. Like,
He said Lucha Submission. That's what he called it. So
yeah. Exactly. So it was really cool to see the flies. And Jack Evans is like, that's what I describe him. He's like a young RVD. I would say he's just hitting everything. It was godlike just watching that. But I guess my only complaint in the match is I thought Angelico would be be much more in the match, I would say.
Agreed.
Yeah, I thought he'd be much a bigger put. That was it. But again, for showing, maybe down the line.
All right, so moving on to Waifu Wars here on AEW. Yeah, okay, this was their idea to call it that. This is not my idea. We had the 66 women Japanese tag team match. So our second women's match of the night. I actually forgot to pull their names up. Do you guys have it? I apologize.
Yep, it was Aja Kong, Yuka Sakizaki, and Emi Sakura versus Hikaru Shida, Riho Abe, and Ryo Mizunami.
Well done. Thank you, Josh.
You're welcome.
So, yeah, so this is why I say we're co-hosts here. Unlike NEP, where I am the host, we're co-hosts here. So,
maybe to the anime nerd to get the Japanese names right.
You hit the anime?
That's right! Yeah! Thanks,
wow! Man. You.
That's what we are. Hey, I watch anime, Outlaw Star Forever. Moving on. So this was another wild card because on one hand, this was AEW showcasing that they're getting international talent. They're not just going homebrew in Europe. They're going across the ocean. Okay, yes, I know England is technically in another continent, but you know what I mean? We're going to Japan and China to get all these epic superstars like we did with OEW, and now we're getting these amazing ladies. And again, if you don't know them, look them up. All right, because like Shida, who's my new crush aside from Kylie, she's fought Kenny Omega, all right, and like in a good quality match. And apparently her matches with Aja Kong are legendary in the wrestling business. So, and then you got Yuka, who's apparently the Japanese Kylie Rae, the magical girl, and everything. And we yeah, you're
my waifu.
Okay, I'll take a Shida and Kylie Rae. I can live with that. So this was fast paced. This was fun, and it felt different from the other women's match, which was the most important thing, because the last thing you want is more of the same. This was not that. These are six women with basically three or four different styles, especially with Aja being the buster of the group. I think it was you, Matt, or you, JJ, you were like, you know, she can't move as well as she used to, but she can still do a five-star match just standing there. I'm like, yeah, that's basically what she did. And it worked. It's like, yeah. You don't knock over Aja. So I like this match. I thought it was fun. There was the botch with the bell ring, but I don't put that on the wrestlers. That was not the wrestler's fault. That was the bell ringer for not knowing their dang job. So, and the ending was still fun. The crowd was into it. They loved it, the high-flying nature and the styles and just the style of the wrestlers, you know, their outfits and the face paint and their looks and everything. We had a Japanese woman leading a British chant in an American wrestling ring. Welcome to AEW, ladies and gentlemen. We will rock you.
Yes, and I guess the worst part about it was coming from a W background, and the way they do things is like, you know, one school thought, one way to do it, international wrestlers don't sell, and then AEW is like, yo, this does work, you just don't have faith in it. It does work. Even though the current always argument I had with people when they talk about international wrestlers not doing well in WWE, which always gets me upset, is, well, they don't learn English. I'm like, you don't need English to be a good performer. I'm clearly pretty sure all six of those women probably know thumbs up and whatever, and they still sold that crowd.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure Aja didn't say a single word in English, and the crowd didn't give a dang. They were like, oh, yeah, Aja's trying to rally us up. Let's do it.
Do it. Yeah. So that's, again, guys who buy that wheelhouse thinking, this proves you wrong. Just, enjoy it.
Absolutely. And, first off, I just got to say, Outlaw Star was an amazing anime. Good choice.
Thank you.
Good choice.
It is not the Kmart Cowboy Bebop that haters make it out to be, so stop hating.
Wrong.
Oh, are you serious? Oh, my God. That's A1 podcast was here right there.
Well, let me see this way. Outlaw Star was so memorable for me. I still have a crush on Aisha Clan. I still want to marry her somehow, and I have actually incorporated her into one of my comic books. In a loose way, obviously. So.
Right, not to get sued.
Yeah, exactly. So, anyway,
second,
matching.
And secondly, I just got to say, Yuka Sakazaki has officially replaced Kairi Sane as my waifu, who replaced Asuka as my waifu. So I moved through waifus pretty quickly. But yeah, I actually followed Yuka in Japan, obviously. I know about the whole magical girl gimmick. So I was ecstatic when I found out that she was signed to AEW. And yeah, she just brought that awesome energy. Her theme song was just absolutely perfect for her gimmick. She's got that high energy. She's the Japanese Kylie Rae of AEW. And oh my God, we need to have a match between these two, like, right now. Let's make that happen for Fight of the Fallen. Please book it, Cody. But yeah, this was a lot different than the other women's tag or women's Fatal 4-Way, I should say. Aja Kong, yeah, I was the one who made the comment that, yeah, she can't move as well as she does anymore, or she can anymore, but she doesn't have to. And you have to understand something about Japanese wrestling, especially with Joshi's. When you get to the legend status that you are with Aja Kong, you basically don't have to do anything. You just literally get the respect. And that's exactly what Aja did. She stood there. She no-sold a lot of the offense, which is how these big, strong Japanese legends do. You know, it's like, this is my world. I pave the way. You pay respect to me. I ain't selling for you. Worth a crap. None of that stuff. And yet, she still found ways to put him over, because that's how much of a pro she is and how much of a veteran she is. She basically took the bumps she needed to, she hit the moves she needed to, and she handled business as only Aja Kong can. And for someone who is approaching 50 years of age, she is still absolutely amazing and well-respected in this business. So it was a treat seeing her perform last night. And, of course, hats off to the rest of the women in that match. False finish was kind of, you know, on the ring. Yeah, the timekeeper's problem, the bell ringer's problem, whoever it was. Even the referee was like, no, that was only two. Why are you ringing the bell?
Yeah, look on her face like, no, math.
And, of course, the crowd had to react like they gave him a "you redacted up" chant. You know, it was pretty good. But the finish came shortly after, and still, they got a standing ovation, because that is how much they drew them in. And it proved that you don't have to go breakneck speed and Dragon Gate style to get a good, you know, feeling out of the match. They did it, and they did it at a good medium pace. They let everything sink in. The offense meant stuff when it happened, and absolutely phenomenal. I gave this one, I think, like a 4-star match, I think it was. So it was absolutely beautiful. I mean, I think keeping it from being like a 4.5, it wasn't perfect, a perfect 5, but keeping it from 4.5 was that little botch at the end. But yeah, it's still, is in the grand scheme of things, just something very small that you can overlook, because that was just a phenomenal match.
Yeah. All right. Please go ahead.
Oh yeah, I definitely feel the same way. My only complaint was the bell match. My only secondary complaint of it is, why wasn't the camera shining on my waifu? Where was waifu cam? Where was that?
Ugh.
0 out of 10 right there, man. Come on.
Okay, can we also talk about the commentary for this match? Because this had, in my opinion, one of the greatest commentary back and forth ever. It was when Shida and Aja were doing their weapons bout, and Excalibur was like, Shida has actually been trained in kendo by blah, 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 blah.
Exactly,
and then Aja smashes her with the trash can, and Jared goes, yeah, and Aja's been trained in can.
Yes.
Bless you, JR. And that's my best JR can do. I'm sorry. So, all right, moving on to Bloodbath, as you guys called it before the podcast. Cody versus Dustin Rhodes. So before we even get to this match, we have to talk about the buildup, because a certain throne was shown on the stage. And no, Game of Thrones fans, it wasn't that throne. It was the throne of Triple H with his logo, more or less, and a bunch of skulls, because that's kind of his look for this thing. And then Cody looks at the throne, decides not to sit on it, goes to the ring. Brandy pulls out a sledgehammer. That was subtle. And then Cody takes said sledgehammer, goes to it, and with the crowd cheering him on, destroys the throne. And I'm like, okay then. That just happened.
Yep.
It's pretty clear and obvious what they were doing here. It's clearly a shot at season 8 of Game of Thrones and how terrible it was, and how it just broke people's spirits. That's exactly what this was. It was not a shot at anything else. It was Game of Thrones.
Yes.
Get your crap together, guys. You ruined the final season. That was what it was.
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
Take that, HBO.
Because as we all know, Jon should have been on the throne with Arya as his hand. I'm just saying.
All right.
Yeah, this is known, as they say in Game of Thrones. This is known. So, anyway.
Yeah.
So WWE shot aside, I'm sorry, Game of Thrones shot
that
aside. Dear gosh, this match was bloody. It was brutal. Dustin Rhodes is doing flips at 50 years old. How?
As I mentioned before,
flawlessly.
He's eating carrots. He did not take the Vince advice, get bigger, you know? Yeah. He just eat his carrots. Everything worked out okay. Just got to hope for the best.
Yeah. And then these guys are pulling off new moves. Cody did the stomp, which I'm pretty sure I've seen somewhere before. I don't know. Dustin, again, he did the flips. He did like two different variations of the crossroads. He was going all out, but then we saw a couple of moons, despite it being a dome. That happened. No, yeah. Nothing. Okay,
that was the most disturbing part of the match for me. That was more of Cody that I bargained for. Let's just say that.
No, I liked your shot of that's more of Cody Rhodes than I ever wanted to see.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. But, you know, I did like the idea, though, that, you know, Dustin was spanking his little brother. He's got the belt to do it. So that was really funny. But the ending, I felt, was a little slow, even though it was emotional with all the blood and the crossroads and the vertebraker, Dense Fire and everything. But it was a good match, and definitely... it wasn't the main event, but it was basically like a co-main event of sorts, and I felt that match could have been on WrestleMania. I'm just saying.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a sucker for those 80s style slow paced, just drag them out, beat them down, bloody pulp matches, and that's exactly what this was. This was classic wrestling personified, and obviously Dustin with the blade job kind of cut a little too deep, hit a pressure point, and decided to paint himself, Cody, the referee, the ring canvas, the cameraman, the front row, and pretty much the entire parking lot in all of his blood. Because that was just an absolute mess, and the hands over the mouths of the people in the audience said it all. Because, yeah... It's probably something that looked a lot worse than it actually was, but the amount of blood that was just everywhere thanks to Dustin's blade job was just a little hard to watch at times. But then again, I've seen Terry Funk matches. I've seen Ric Flair matches. I've seen a whole bunch of matches where color played the main role, and this was one of those matches where the blood was front and center. It added a lot to the drama of the match. You could definitely tell from the audience reaction. And, it was absolutely just amazing to see. And the old school wrestling fan in me appreciated everything that happened. Dustin played the role perfectly. He took a lot of offense after he got bloodied. He played that, oh my God, I'm dying role type of thing. And only to get, you know, the spirit of the fighting spirit back in him, he made the comeback. He hit a code red at age 50.
Yeah.
A Yoshi tonic, if you want to call it that. Hit that. Obviously, the elevated crossroads, the regular crossroads left and right from both guys. Just the classic, you know, going to the finisher thing. And absolutely beautiful. I mean, that was, to me, pro wrestling, the essence of pro wrestling, and that's the only reason why I gave this a 5-star match. And yeah, it's not going to be, you know, the high-flying, hard-hitting technical masterpiece of like a Kazuchika Okada and Kenny Omega match. It's not going to be the methodical, you know, Ric Flair, Dusty Rhodes type match, but this had its own charm to it, and it told a story from beginning to end, and I think it pulled it off flawlessly, and that's why I gave it 5 stars.
Honestly, I give the match a little bit. I would have given the match a little bit a lower grading, or maybe a 4. My only, because the blood job did kind of scare me, because it reminded me of a bit of ECW stuff. And to me, slower paced matches kind of work, but the build up for me felt like it was like a wave, like a pendulum. Like the build up's a little too high, a little too low, but it did finish well. It was a very entertaining match, and it's nice to see Goldust, you know, Dustin Rhodes performing. It was so good to see him again. Like, he still got it. He still effing got it.
He's 50. They did like a "You Still Got It" chant. I'm like, guys, he never lost it. He never lost it. I remember him in WWE. He was one of the most consistent performers, even when he was just being jobbed on. You know, and that's who he is. He is a natural. He is a consistent wrestler, and that's why he's so good. So, but of course, we can't talk about this match without talking about After the Bell. In one of the most tear-jerking moments in wrestling history, we got Cody asking his older brother, Sniff, to join him at Fight for the Fallen in a tag team match against the Young Bucks. And the crowd was crying so hard, all right? And my friend, Amy O, they actually had her on one of the cameras because she was standing and, like, tearing up during this whole thing when Cody's doing his monologue. And, like, I'm not crying! I'm not crying! So, and even Cody was, like, getting choked up. Like, that's, you can't act that, all right? He was literally emotional during that segment. And the hug at the end and the Rhodes Brothers United, that was so dang cool. So suck it, WWE.
Yeah, and a lot of people are like, well, why would they reunite after they just did that to each other? It's just because sometimes things just need to get settled. You don't hate each other. You just need to get it out of your system. Just beat the crap out of each other and go have a beer afterwards to say everything's cool. And that's exactly what happened. And that's the kind of story they told. And when Cody just broke down and asked, you know, I need my bolder brother to, you know, to be his tag partner. That was the beer right there. That was the smoothing over. It was absolutely wonderful.
That was the beer. I like that.
Yeah.
That was the beer. All right. But now we do have a couple more matches to get to, but there was one other thing that we needed to talk about, and that was the presentation of the AEW World title. Presented by Bret the Hitman Hart.
Yep.
What?
Yep.
Oh, I think, honestly, outside of a certain other someone, this was the biggest surprise of the night. All right? Because, I mean, getting Kong, that was cool. Smash Brothers, sure. The other guy, oh, yeah. But then Bret freaking Hart. Like, what, a month or so after the Hall of Fame ceremony and everything? And, no, I'm here in AEW. I'm presenting this title. So, yeah, that was, yeah, wow.
Actually, before we go through that, one thing we forgot to mention, speaking of surprises, back in the Cody and Dustin match, when Brandy got kicked out, none other than Diamond Dallas Page came out to retrieve her. So, quick shout out, Diamond Dallas Page. Did not mean to offend you by missing you. I'll do your yoga, I promise. I'll buy a package right now. So, I'm sorry. But be that as it may, Bret Hart, wow. Yeah. That was like the last person I would ever expect to see, you know, present an AEW championship. Even though he accidentally called it World Championship Wrestling, he had a few things happen to him over the years. It's forgivable.
Yeah.
But still, to see him come out and, you know, just be there, it didn't matter what happened. His very presence itself made that moment extra special. And of course, we got Adam Page coming out, and then of course MJF just completely rips down Bret Hart. I don't know how tasteful it was for him to scream, "Oh my God, look out, there's a fan behind you." I don't know how tasteful that was. I kind of didn't agree with it, but at the same point, I'm sure Bret was cool.
He's a super heel. This is literally what he does.
Yeah, I guess it fits the character. I was just a little taken back by it, but hey, whatever. It's wrestling. You can't really take this stuff seriously anyway.
Yeah.
The whole back and forth between MJF and then Adam Page, and then all of a sudden he tries to, you know, play the chicken heel and leave, but then again, Jungle Boy comes out, Jimmy Havoc comes out, they got him like in that little, you know, pincer move, they beat him up, they throw him over the guardrail, and then all of a sudden, like, bam, no warning, Bret's there holding up the title. I'm like, whoa, get a camera on that.
Yeah,
and
that was hilarious.
That was the only thing that I didn't like about this presentation. And it wasn't Bret's fault. It was the camera work fault, because we only got a couple of, you know, I guess brief shots of the championship. I was hoping for, you know, a longer focused in, you know, close-up of the title so we could fully, you know, soak it in and get familiar with it. But we have the internet for that, I guess, and still shots. So that's where you can find it. But I was kind of hoping they would do that live on camera. And the reason why I say that, because the belt is, oh my God, it's so gorgeous.
It's beautiful.
It's beautiful. When I saw that, I'm like, that is a wrestling championship. That does not look like it was designed by a second grader, aka, you know, not going to be defended 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Yeah.
That is a wrestling championship. And as JR put it,
That's a strap.
Beautiful championship, great segment. And according to the news, Bret Hart kind of slipped on his way back. They didn't catch it on camera, but he kind of took a fall. And I just want to say I'm glad to hear that it wasn't serious and he's doing okay. And, you know, thankfully, you know, it wasn't mired by some tragedy that could have been. So, you know, good on Bret Hart for staying healthy on that. You still got it, Brett.
Yeah, thank you. And thanks, AEW, for getting Bret Hart to do this. I mean, they could have had that comedian guy do it, and that would have been okay. Or, you know, they could have had, like, Cody. I guess Cody just got out of the match. They could have had, like, the Young Bucks or something and everything come out. Or even Tony Khan. They could have Tony Khan do it. I think that would have been interesting. But to have Bret Hart do this, I mean, A, that's another shot at WWE. And B, that's just like legitimizing the title, and yet that title is gorgeous. So
yeah, it was like I was just shocked to see Bret, just simply because like Bret, you still there, boy? I thought he honestly just rode up to the sunset. He did everything he could to just get back at Vince. You know, I know it got into the Hall of Fame, whatever. It's just like, all right, it's over, it's past me. Just came back, let everyone know the belt. This is wrestling. F you, Vince.
Pretty much. All right, and as another FU to Vince, we had a tag team co-main event that was, it was one star. I mean, do we really expect good matches from the Young Bucks and the Lucha Bros? I mean, let's be honest here. This is a tag team match. I mean, come on.
Tag teams don't have a place in wrestling. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Oh, God.
What do you think? This is going to be like a party of some kind? No. All right, seriously though. Young Bucks, Lucha Bros was everything we could have expected and more. I knew the Lucha Bros when they were singles wrestlers via Lucha Underground. And even back then, you know, season one even, they were legendary. And then as their characters went through, you know, seasons 2 through 4, they boggled my mind. These were some of my favorite wrestlers. That's why at All In, I was stunned that they got Pentagon, because he's like one of the coolest wrestlers around. And I love seeing his match with Kenny Omega. So now seeing him in a tag team match with Rey Fénix and going up against the Young Bucks, it was awesome. I mean, there was so much going on. I mean, there was hard hitting action, but they also played the story of the Ring Rust with the Young Bucks, which they've been teasing and being the Elite. Mm-hmm. So I loved like the miscues and the unintentional hitting, and yet they still pulled off like all the moves that they needed to, like bang for your buck and what was it, like the 85% or something like that, or 15%, something like that. And you know, they were going to the well, and then you know that spot with Fénix on the ropes hitting both the bucks at the same time, like the Hurricanrana, while jumping all around. Dear gosh, that is, dude, this guy is so cool. All right, Animo. So I will say, at this point in the show, all of the Elite had won and a lot of their friends had won. So I was kind of disappointed that the Young Bucks got away so cleanly, especially after they were teasing a new move, but they didn't like show it. So, but you know, still a 5-star match by far. Crowd loved it. This is awesome. Tag team wrestling chance. I think they even had a Fight Forever sneak in there. So yeah, this was an awesome match.
Absolutely. And because of Pentagon Jr., I'm going to officially rename this podcast El Cuatro Cinco Cero Miedo. There you go.
That's I love it. It.
That's going to be the podcast name now. But yes, it was.
That's actually really good.
Thank you. But yes, this was just off the wall crazy. I mean, Rey Fénix might as well go back in time 25 years and change his last name to Mysterio, because I have not seen anyone work the ropes since Rey Mysterio like Rey Fénix did last night. I mean, holding on to, was it Matt Jackson's hand, going up, hitting a super kick on the top rope, bouncing off, and then hitting a flying Hurricanrana, like, all in one fluid movement, or movement, rather, was just unbelievable to see. And, of course, he had big spot after big spot. This wasn't a match that started off slow and has built its pacing up, this has had its foot on the gas from the beginning to the end. And this is what really brings out that classic feel to modern wrestling. And a lot of people are like, oh no, you got teams like the Revival, you know, mimicking the Brainbusters, that old ground and pound and all that stuff. There was a time for that. It's called the 80s. All right. Now we're in 2019. Wrestling has become more athletic. It's been more high energy. It's kind of almost, I don't want to say it's a sport because we always know it's going to be entertainment no matter what, but this is kind of like the epitome of modern tag team wrestling, what we saw here tonight. The Young Bucks, the Lucha Brothers, they basically brought everything they possibly could and gave us a match that not only met but exceeded our expectations. And you know that with the Triple A Tag Team Championships, thank you, Justin Roberts, once again, still around the waist of the Young Bucks, this is not over. So Fyter Fest is coming up. And both teams are booked there. There's going to be some sort of altercation. We may not see them at Fight of the Fallen because obviously Young Bucks are going up against the Rhodes Brothers. But All Out isn't booked yet, and a return match could happen if AAA down in Mexico decides to keep the titles on the Young Bucks, because obviously it's their championships and they have the final say at the end of the day. So if they make it to August, is it?
August 31st.
Yeah, if they make it to August 31st for All Out, I'm fully expecting another rematch for those tag team titles. And at that point, I think the Lucha Brothers will take them back. But that's me just armchair booking well into the future. But for what we got tonight, simply stunning. And yes, my second 5-star match rating of the night.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm going to have to give it 5 stars too, just that match. It was just so entertaining to watch how the Young Bucks just played into the crowd. And the Lucha Brothers, who has some indication of who they were, but I was like watching these guys like, holy crap, international talent, that's good. Yeah, like it was like watching, like, I guess the best way to go, it was like watching the young Dudley boys, you know, when you were younger, you're like 5, 6, 7 years old, man, the Dudleys were awesome, the table is like, just the explosiveness of those matches were godlike. And it just felt like tag team wrestling is important. You can sell that. It's a big thing. It's an aesthetic of wrestling that's important. And they managed to just capture all of that so well and sell it to the crowd, as well as just, oh, man. I mean, the only thing is, as Todd pointed out early in the podcast, I know they kind of played that the favorites are the win, the in-crowd boys got to win, but couldn't Lucha Bros come on that map? Couldn't they just get that map? Please, just give it to the Lucha Boys, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. And then, for the main event, Chris Jericho versus Kenny Omega! Thank you, Justin Roberts. Seriously, yeah. You need to sell that Omega, and he sells that Omega. Gosh dang it. All right. So, this is the main event. This was the highly anticipated rematch of their New Japan war that happened in 2018, and this would determine the other participant in the first ever AEW world title match with Hangman Page, who won the Casino Battle Royal. I was happy with the match. It wasn't, I've seen some great Kenny Omega matches, and of course the Okada match is legend, obviously. It wasn't as good as that, and I honestly did not see their 2018 match for various reasons, but this was good. This was a good match. Jericho still got it. He's bigger than I remember him, though.
Yeah.
He's bigger. I mean, granted, it's still muscle, but, you know, he's bigger than even List of Jericho. He was skinny in List of Jericho, so I don't know, but he still did really good. Kenny is Kenny, you know. Those V triggers, dear gosh.
Yeah, he activated.
Yeah, and then the various spots. The table spot was fun. How that all played out. The ending was a little botched with the first failed one winged angel, but they made it up. And then the Judas effect. You know, that was a cool way to end it. So, you know, not the best match of the night. I honestly have to give that to the Young Bucks Lucha Brothers, but which is hilarious because I said Kenny versus Pentagon was the best match of All In. But, you know, it worked, and that was what was important.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jericho, yeah, he did put on a little bit of weight, but, you know, he's still beautiful on the inside. I had to go there.
What have I become?
What has he become? Well, a few donuts shy. Never mind. But yeah, for his age, my God, Jericho can still go. How does someone keep reinventing himself and staying relevant like he does? It is absolutely amazing, the various character transitions that he's gone through over the years. And he even did that. He represented all of that in his entrance, from doing Lionheart, the List of Jericho, obviously the Light Jacket Jericho, and now Am I Evil Jericho. So, you know, just seeing that entrance, all the presentation, made you think back to everything he's done throughout the years. And then you see what he's doing tonight, and it's like, how is this even possible? It's like, everyone considers Ric Flair to be the greatest wrestler of all time, but a case has to be made for Chris Jericho in this point.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah. Ric Flair was always Ric Flair. You know, the jet flying, limousine riding, kiss stealing, wheeling dealing, son of a gun.
Woo!
That's been Ric Flair from day one until today. There has been no variation. Jericho has been a metamorphosis of wrestling personas for decades.
He's
and I don't think
Madonna.
There's been anybody on this planet that's done it like Jericho has, and that in itself puts him in contender for arguably the greatest wrestler of all time. And he proved it once again tonight. And yeah, this was not one of the best Kenny Omega matches, and I think that's very, I don't know, fair to say, because after we've been spoiled four times with Kazuchika Okada, God, I can't say that guy's name, and Kenny Omega in those, you know, 6-star, 6.5-star, 7-star matches. Thank you, Dave Meltzer, who gasps in Japanese every single time he watches them. We've been spoiled with that level of competition out of Kenny Omega that we forget that he's not going to have that level of match with every single opponent. But still, he put forth an amazing effort. Jericho nailed it tonight. Not a 5-star match, unfortunately. No. But for what they gave us, I would give that a solid 4. And I really am interested to see how Jericho can hang with Hangman Adam Page. I mean, he did a great job with Naito, so we know he can still go in that type of capacity. And now with the title on the line, you know, it's going to be something special. And it's hard for me to predict, but I'm just going to say they're going to swerve us. It's not going to be an elite member holding that title. Jericho is going to ride this wave. He's going to continue to be the quote-unquote face of AEW, and he's going to get his thank you by winning the AEW championship. I think that's going to be my official prediction for this.
That's interesting to look at it. I think I heard Jericho mention on a podcast before, his interview, why he's always been reinventing himself, always pushing it, because he sees himself as a rebel. He sees him, and I agree with one thing he said, that when he was in Japan, Wrestle Kingdom, he got people to watch New Japan Pro Wrestling because he's Chris Jericho. He's just always been this guy who's kind of teetering to the fringe of it, and always been reinventing himself when it comes to moves, design, look, everything. I mean, like, seeing him come out the entrance of AEW, what Jericho am I going to get? And I think that's the entire appeal of Jericho. You don't know what you're going to get. Are you going to get young Jericho? Are you going to get the current old man Jericho? Are you going to get Lion Tamer Jericho? You don't know. And all of those are still entertaining personas and facades that he has himself, and that made it great. As for Kenny Omega, yeah, I definitely agree with you on the criticism that it's like you're not going to get, you know, freaking steak every time. Sometimes you got to eat a hamburger. And hamburgers are good too. And that was my only complaint. I felt like Kenny may have kind of underperformed, but again, he's done so many legendary matches. It's hard to see he's always going to hit out of the ballpark every time. Though, it made me cringe a bit. I was like, you don't talk about the camera shot where he hit the, I think it was the power bomb. What was that about? That was weird. If I remember correctly, I'm probably referring to someone else. But other than that, it was definitely a solid match to watch. And Jericho is probably riding this to the gravy train. I think it's about a 3-year deal with them. He said this is the most money ever made, ever.
Maybe.
Yeah. So this is pretty crazy.
Yeah. So a solid ending to the night. And, you know, this was actually going back to the Kenny thing. You know, he noted in a documentary before the bell about Double or Nothing that, you know, he feels that he hasn't been himself recently because he lost to Tanahashi in his final New Japan match, which was obviously going to happen, but then he lost to Don Callis at a house show or something like that. And so he was training hard to try and be who he was again, and now he's lost to Jericho. So his last official three matches are losses. So this might be the best thing for Kenny in terms of story, because now it's not, oh, he's not the ace anymore. He has to work back to being the ace, which is kind of what happened to Okada back in New Japan, which led to him getting the title eventually. So I don't mind seeing, you know, a redemption arc for Kenny Omega. I think that'd be kind of cool. So, but we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah. Also, I don't know if you guys noticed these small details during the actual match, but Jericho's offense matched his entrance. So we saw him go through Lionheart. We saw him go through the list. We saw him go through the light jacket. And if you noticed, during the match, he hit a lion salt and used a lion tamer for Lionheart. He hit the Walls of Jericho for the list, and then he hit the code breaker for, you know, the light jacket. And then he came out and busted out the new finisher, the Judas Effect, for the MI Evil Jericho. His offense was also a homage to his entire wrestling career.
I like it.
Yeah.
All right. So that was the end of the night. Nothing big happened after the Kenny Jericho match. No, not at all.
Nothing.
And we just faded to black. That was a curtain call.
And there certainly wasn't anything in the Cracker Barrel that mysteriously appeared in the main event. I'm just saying.
Just saying, fine.
So real talk. We all thought there was someone in the barrel. And we either thought it was a certain lunatic, or I thought it might be Marty, because I thought that would be hilarious. But, so Jericho's trying to get his thank you, and the crowd starts to go nuts, and I'm looking for the barrel, Josh is looking for the barrel, and then the camera pans to John freaking Moxley, a.k.a. Dean Ambrose for all you WWE fans. So yes, John Moxley is in AEW. Less than a month after he left WWE in let's just call it a fashion. And
Yeah.
And he, what does he do? He goes up to Jericho, Dirty Deeds. He goes up to Kenny. They fight, because Kenny ain't going down like a punk. And then they go up to the beautifully stacked, massive Double or Nothing poker chips, which I loved on the stage, all right? Legit talk, I loved those things. I wonder what happened to them. So, you know, he does Dirty Deeds on that, and then he throws Kenny off the ring, or sorry, off the chips, and the final shot is him posing in front of the Double or Nothing sign, basically, and JR going, hey, what do you think about AEW now? I'm like, I'll tell you what I think, JR. Oh, my gosh. I mean, could you have... I mean, a lot of us, I mean, this is like going back a month or so, a lot of us were thinking that Marty was going to be the end, you know, because there was talk of his contract ending at the end of April or the beginning of May. Apparently, that didn't happen yet. And so everyone's like, oh, they're going to finally have a fully reunited Elite. No, we're throwing in the lunatic, and now we're all going crazy. Oh boy.
I think the only thing that would have made that better is if Jericho and Kenny were standing up and he threw out the shield fist and then attacked them both.
Oh, that would be hilarious.
That would have been hilarious, I couldn't believe the barrel was a swerve.
Oh, God.
I mean, I even thought I saw the referee tapping the barrel when he was hunched down, like, all right, get ready for your cue because Jericho's talking. I could have sworn he did that, and I'm like, oh. The barrel's going to open. Here comes the gobbledygooker. It's going to be big. And nope. Out from the crowd. Boom. John Moxley, a.k.a. the artist formerly known as Dean Ambrose, hitting the ring. Dirty Deeds to Jericho. Dirty Deeds to referee Paul Turner. Because, yes, we can say the referee's names here. And, you know, Kenny is just like, yep, I ain't going down in that brawl. But the only thing that confused me out of this is, why did they have Moxley and Omega brawl setting up a potential match when Omega's already booked against Shima for the next pay-per-view? Didn't make sense.
Well, I mean, it's foresight. They're just planning ahead, and they wanted to have, you know, planting seeds. That's all it is. And for all we know, Moxley could come out during Fight for the Fallen and, you know, disrupt the match, or, you know, do the same thing at the end, you know? You know, Fight for the Fallen, even though it is their next PPV event, I don't think it's, based on what I've been seeing, it's not meant to be the, like, tier of Double or Nothing. I mean, it's complicated because, you know, it's meant to raise money for the victims of the shootings in Florida, which is amazing on infinite amount of levels. So I don't know if it's meant to be the same tier as Double or Nothing. So that's why they're probably going to save it for maybe All Out. That's just my thoughts. I mean, obviously, I don't know.
That's a possibility.
It's a possibility.
Or, yeah, you know, or the troll possibility. It's a swerve within a swerve within a swerve.
Yeah. And just to be clear, unlike Awesome Kong or Bret Hart, we have official confirmation that Jon Moxley has signed a multi-year deal with AEW. He will be at future events. He will be on the AEW TV show, but he will also be allowed to do all his international indie shows should he want to, which just goes to show why AEW is better, because they want their wrestlers to go throughout the world.
I think it's also too. It's a very brilliant marketing and signing. Okay, you wrestler person, maintain your persona, whatever you do. You're going out to promote. You're still promoting us and promoting their show. It's a cross promotion. It's an olive branch to good arms, which the current competition doesn't just allow to do currently. It's not like, you know, I work at WWE, I wrestle a bit, and I go to New Japan World. I got to end my contract with you. That's the only way to do it. I can't maintain that relationship.
Yeah, and it's actually a similar deal that they did with the Lucha Bros, because while Lucha Bros are going to be, you know, on and off, they're still going to do Triple A, and they will do the MLW because they like going there, and you know they have like this open ended contract, which is great because it's like, you know, like I said, it's cross promotion of the highest order. So.
Oh, and another thing I just came to the door, it actually reduces stress on wrestlers or people getting injured or fatigue, etc., because now you have a somewhat more flexible, usable roster. Let's just say, as you said, Lucha Bros. Maybe Lucha Bros only available these 3 months, and all the you know, the Young Bucks can't do it because, you know, they caught, you know, a cold, right?
Yeah.
Now you could push the same storyline for 3 months that you had tended for the Young Bucks and put on Lucha Bros, and it'll end in 3 months because you already thought that far in advance.
Yeah.
Big brain.
Yeah. So, but dear gosh, Jon freaking Moxley.
Yeah, right, that was such a sweet move.
They're still talking about this. I mean, again, it's Sunday at the time of this recording, and they're still talking about Moxley showing up and what this means and, you know, the impact and he basically did the Shield entrance. You know, he did the Shield entrance to get to the freaking ring. So it was a heck of a way to end the show. So, all right, so we're going to head into our wrap-up now. So let's talk about match of the night for each of us. Just a short little spiel about why you thought it was the best. For me, as I said, I feel it was Young Bucks, Lucha Bros. It was the styles. It was the intensity. It was the length. And they had, like, so many fake-out pins. You know, they had the double pile drivers from the Young Bucks did that. And then, like, all the super kicks and the hits and the breaking of the arm, which is really breaking, but whatever. You know, all of it was so good, and it was totally 5 stars. Tag team wrestling.
For me, it's got to be Cody and Dustin. You know, it was the first 5-star rating I gave, and I know you guys thought it was a little less than 5 stars, but for me, it was that classic wrestling match, and it brought me back to what I loved about pro wrestling. And it told a story, it had physicality, it drew you in, it captivated the audience, it did everything a wrestling match needed to do. And to me, that was just, I don't want to say perfection, but it was about as close to a perfect wrestling match as possible. So that would be it. And of course, many people, with me being the anime fan, would say it would be the 6-woman Japanese tag. That's not a match of the night for me, that's just guilty pleasure. Let me just put that out there.
True enough. I guess my match tonight to me is I don't know. I'm actually torn between Kenny Jericho and, as much as a guilty pleasure, Waifu Wars, but it's probably go to Kenny Jericho. Simply because I've always loved Jericho. It's just the way his matches perform. And Kenny Omega, I have a limited experience because I only watched maybe 4 or 5 matches of him, and I seen when more matches over the high, you know, the good stuff. So that was just a good match across the board. I loved it. The Waifu Wars is, as Josh says, a guilty pleasure, and we need more Waifu Wars. I think AEW needs to change their name to Waifu Elite Wrestling.
Stop it.
That would be it. But yeah, the Jericho and Omega match strips is hard hitting, great high flying stuff. Jericho iconically using his entire repertoire of moves in that, it was just well played. Oh, and you know, the tape, and you know, Omega being the hero, you know, protecting Jericho's face. Always be a hero. Oh, never let your brothers get your ass kicked like that. Never let that happen. Never let that happen, because injuries are real.
All right, so throughout this podcast, we have obviously been praising AEW and all the wrestlers for doing this just an amazing show, and truly amazing show. That being said, we have some thoughts, some considerations, some opinions about how we can do it just a little bit better. Because as great as Double or Nothing was, there were a couple of faults, and we've talked a few of them before, like the parts of the Bret Hart segment and certain match snafus, like the ring bell thing. My biggest thing was commentary, because there were multiple times when either was Alvarez, JR, or Excalibur kind of were flubbing lines, saying wrong things. They at points they were like, "What are we talking about?" Or they were saying, "We're talking about one thing, we're talking about another." And as I was saying to JJ and Matt last night, you know, it is their first show, but they definitely need to get it together. Don't get me wrong, JR is still legend. I love Excalibur. Excalibur is great. Alvarez, I kind of felt he was a link at sometimes, but then he was doing great at other things. They have to get their chemistry together, and they need to do it before All Out. So, and then there was obviously a few technical issues. Like, I was watching the buy-in on YouTube, or trying to, but it wasn't on, and then but I had already bought the pay-per-view, so I went to switch to that, and oh, it was on there. How was I supposed to know? So there was a lot of people on the regular YouTube AEW channel chat like, "Why isn't the stream starting?" And then they cut off Cody during his opening of the show, so that's not nice at all. So they gotta work out a few technical things, but when the worst parts of the night are the technical things and parts of the announcement, you're still doing a good job.
Yeah.
Actually, the worst part of the night was something that I don't know if you guys caught this, but I definitely did. But they Michael Cole'd WrestleMania 15, their main event. In other words, they spoiled it. And I don't know if you caught it, but this is what happened. Obviously, Jericho and Omega are fighting in the main event, with the winner going to Fight of the Fallen for the AEW Championship. Yet twice earlier in the broadcast, they already mentioned that Omega was booked against Shima at Fight of the Fallen. So why would someone in the main event be fighting for a match at that pay-per-view when he was already booked?
Okay, hold on. If you're talking about what happened, what Bret Hart said, then I heard that, but he also said, or a future pay-per-view. I don't remember them confirming that this is going to be a Fight for the Fallen.
Okay, so that makes more sense then.
Okay, because I heard that flub, because that was another thing of the Bret Hart segment. He said, you know, at Fight for the Fallen or another pay-per-view. I'm like, yeah, nice one. Yeah, I have a feeling they're gonna do it at All Out, but again, don't hold me to that. It just depends on how they want to treat Fight for the Fallen. But no, that I don't think at present we know definitively when the title match is gonna be.
Okay, so yeah, a little bit of miscommunication from AEW. Then it led me to believe that the title was being decided at Fight for the Fallen. So that kind of was, it just made it like click in my head where it says, why are they advertising Kenny Omega at the next show when he's fighting in the main event to go to that show to wrestle for the title? So, okay, so it's a flub on Bret Hart's part that confused me. Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
I take it back. But everything else that Todd said about the commentary issues and some of the production things, obviously those are things that can be fixed. I mean, it was their first show, and I thought it was a very valiant effort put forth by all. So, you know, not a lot of first shows go that well. Just ask some other companies who tried to and failed. Who sometimes didn't even have a working stream.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, we're not going to get into those things. Ring of Honor. What? I'm sorry.
Or how about Impact showing commercials instead of their main event on Twitch? And
yeah, 24 minutes of commercials. Yes, yeah. Congratulations.
What they timed it? 25, 27 minutes of pure commercial for a main event? Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I remember that. I was like, what is this life?
Yeah. All right, but okay. Matt, what was your biggest thing?
My biggest thing was commentary, and I want to say, I think The length of the matches were fine. My only thing is one of my pet peeves of wrestling sometimes is when someone hits a finishing move and the match isn't over after the finishing move and they kick out. That's my only pet peeve. Maybe because I'm old, stuff like that. That's my only small pet peeve. But that's it. Everything else was solid. Again, commentary, work on the camera.
There was camera issues.
And JR, if you looked at him, I know he's older, but he looks really tired. He looked really tired doing that.
Well, he was doing StarCast all weekend, so...
Exactly. So, yeah, exactly. I felt like maybe they should rest him up a bit. Maybe they should have just, you know, floated him in and out. Maybe grab a coffee on his side or something. That could have been fine. But all in all, the entire event for a brand new company with brand new wrestlers with doing things straight from the gate with some, you know, pros, et cetera, et cetera, solid 4 out of 5. Only thing holding it was the technicalities and maybe a couple of matches based on personal taste. But it was a solid effing event.
All right. So with Double or Nothing now officially in the past, which is scary when you think about it, because weren't we just in January?
Like a couple, you know, weeks ago when it was actually months.
Yeah. Anyway, so now with Double or Nothing is in the books, we now look ahead to the next few events. First is Fyter Fest, which is obviously a smaller event, but meant to be fun and funny if you're watching BV. Then we have Fight for the Fallen. So I just want to know, they have Fyter Fest and Fight for the Fallen. That's not going to get confusing at all.
No, never.
No, never. So Fight for the Fallen is definitely going to be apparently a big event. They're going to be in Jacksonville, Florida. So, and it's in July
13th, I think it was.
13th, yeah, something like that. And so we already got a few matches booked for there. That's going to be cool. And then, as announced during Double or Nothing, the sequel to All in Chicago, Illinois, at the Sears Center, All Out, which, if you recall, last year was actually in the name of Flip Gordon's party, but I'm just saying. And it's going to be on August 31st with tickets going on sale June 14th. And I'm definitely going to try and go because I was at All In. I wanted to be at All Out, and I'm very excited.
That's good. I guess you can give us the live experience so we can, while we sit here and look at it from our screen, Amino, you'll be actually there.
Hey, feel free to come to Chicago, guys. I would happily do a live podcast with you. You know I would.
I don't know. I'm too adjusted to my New York bitter lifestyle to enjoy the windy streets of Chicago.
Ah.
But honestly, you could probably also give us insight on the any chance or meme chance they're actually saying in the crowd. That's the only thing I would like to hear.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be great. Hopefully no one's chanting "You can't wrestle." That'd be pretty mean.
I almost punched a guy during the women's match, the fail four way, because I literally got a women's wrestling chant started because it was so awesome, and this guy was drunk behind me and he's like, "Don't chant that." I'm like, "Dude, shut the heck up. These women are putting it all out there." So yeah. There's always those. And then he fell asleep. He was so drunk, he fell asleep. I'm like, how in the heck? So, but I'm glad they're going back to Chicago. They've been teasing the return to Chicago for a while, and I'm excited. And, yeah, the future is definitely looking bright for All Elite Wrestling.
Yeah, and, of course, you know, we got other stuff coming up, too. Like, just 1 week from, actually not even 1 week, 6 days from now, we got NXT TakeOver 25 on June 1st.
Yep, and so that will be our second show where we will talk about the TakeOver, because TakeOver is, what's the word? Quality. Yeah.
Absolute quality.
It's nice.
Oh, God, man, I love NXT.
I love NXT, too, and this is looking like a good card, and we still don't have all the matches out, I don't think. Or if we do, it's, you know, they can still throw one in, but, yeah.
Wait, what was the running joke about NXT again? I remember NXT isn't really WWE.
Yeah,
ever.
Yeah.
That
NXT is just presented by
WWE. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it makes me laugh because I think NXT, if I remember the management structure, it's actually run by Triple H, I believe.
It is, 100%.
Yeah, it is, right. So it's run by Triple H, not touched by Vince whatsoever. And it's a better show. It's like, you know, knock on Vince, maybe you should hang it up. You gave us a good 3-4 decades of solid wrestling. Maybe it's time to go to the pasture.
So, all right, but let's wrap it up with this. How excited are you for the future of AEW, especially knowing that there are still some surprises in store? Like, for example, at Fight for the Fallen, we're going to get the debut of Bea Priestley, who is, of course, the wife of Will Ospreay, who I know a lot of people are hoping will eventually end up in AEW. They were showing off another women's wrestler. Who was that? Do you guys remember? She had the video package.
Oh God, you're right. I don't remember.
Okay, I apologize to you if you're listening, but you know, I was excited for that one. So they still got women's wrestlers coming. They had the Super Smash Brothers. Now we got Moxley, and with you know Double or Nothing, no doubt being a success. The future, I'm looking. I'm so excited for what's coming.
I absolutely agree. This was an amazing first showing. You know, hiccups aside, it's just refreshing. I think it's the best word to describe it, to see something out there that's not WWE. And I know everyone's like, well, Impact is there, but
Impact
has been through such an identity crisis. It's like NWA TNA, now we're TNA, now we're Impact, now we're Global Force Wrestling, now we're back to Impact. And I don't think they're ever going to recover. I mean, Dixie Carter might be an absolute sweetheart in real life, but the basically ruined that company. She took everything that Jeff and Jerry Jarrett put into it and just crushed it. And yeah. I don't think it's going to be something that it can actually recover from. But
basically, yeah. I mean, and if you even sap on it, you look at Jim Cornette's point of view, the whole thing, Jesus Christ, it's just, ugh. It's a train wreck.
So, as an alternative to WWE, and of course, Ring of Honor, for as long as they've been around, sure, they're on, you know, television and stuff, but
barely.
It's like syndicated television, and they don't have the budget or the presence. And, you know, Tony Khan could have done that. They could have invested in Ring of Honor. But no, they took the chance with Cody, with AEW, and I think it was a good move. This is going to be the big number two promotion, if it's not already, after one show.
Basically, that's the way I look at it as well. But anyway, guys, I guess that gives us a good time to get covers all of Double or Nothing.
Yeah.
Hopefully, you guys will continue to follow us next month. We follow our journeys to wrestling, good old wrestling stuff. And be sure to follow us on outerhaven.net and social media. And Todd, you got any final words to say?
Well, like I said, we will be doing our... You won't have to wait till next month. Our next show will likely be us talking about TakeOver because, you know, TakeOver is quality. Quality. Always quality. And so we're looking forward to that. And then we'll be with you throughout this journey because this is going to be one of the most interesting years in wrestling in a long time. So
yep.
For JJ and Matt, I'm Todd. Thank you for watching our show, and we'll see you next time.